The End Podcast is brought to you by Emma, email marketing that works for you.
In a world where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is The Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
Welcome to episode 3 of Puppy Watch.
Chelsea is still asleep on the floor.
If you're just tuning into this episode and miss the other ones, we have a new puppy, Chelsea, named after Chelsea Market in New York City, one of our favorite places on Earth. I'm Scott, she's Allison, and they are Emma, which the show is brought to you by the fantastic folks at email. Is there anybody better? I'll fight you if you think there's anybody better.
He will.
We will fight. I'm not sure if that's approved scripting from them, but I will fight you. That's independent of Emma. They do not endorse me fighting anybody, nor do I endorse me fighting anybody.
He has not been giving approval for excessive force.
On Xbox, I will fight you on Xbox. I am fairly decent at that, as long as it's not a game that I'm not good at. So on the show today, we got a whole bunch of fun stuff. Nano influencers. That could have been our made up word, no problem, but I just gave it away right now. We have robotic pizza companies.
We have too much content for this episode. We're probably not going to get all of it.
How Amazon's changing how products are designed. Some fun stuff. Maybe even a made up word or so thrown to you. But first.
What? What's first?
I have beef.
Oh gosh, beef.
Now, as one who has a previous life in the motivational world.
And
is responsible for the majority of the cheesiest slideshow videos of all time on the internet. We made 62 of them at the company in the mid-2000s. I have problems with some things are being shared. And one of my problems is just do this. And the word just, and overall, we've talked about this ad nauseum.
We have, yeah.
About, well, just do this or just do this. And one of my problems is the kind of the thing, it's the proliferation, if I may say. Of success type of advice. And one thing that's going around is it's a chart that's split in two. And on one side, it says what successful people do. On the other side, it's what unsuccessful people
do. All right, I'm going to see how many of them I check off.
Wayne, you too. You follow along.
Let's
successful
see.
People.
I have a pencil. I'm making notes.
Successful people read every day. So I'm gonna keep track too here. And you listening at home, if you're driving, please don't write this down. But one side is going to be success. The other side is unsuccessful.
Okay.
Successful people read every day.
That means
books. It's books. I read too. I read a stop sign. I read but books. Let's go books. Okay. So, all right. Unsuccessful people watch TV.
Watch TV every day.
So you're one. I'm one. Yeah, I'm two. And 0-2. Successful people compliment others.
I think you did a lovely job of reading that number, and I'm going to check yes.
And I too think I did a lovely job.
That's complimenting yourself. That doesn't count.
There's no context here.
It says compliment others.
Yes.
That's context.
It just says compliment. Doesn't it say others.
Compliment people.
Yeah.
I think it's inferred.
I'm doing others. A bang up job on this episode, by the way. Boom, successful.
All right, I'm giving it myself a check mark for that.
Unsuccessful people criticize. Ooh, that's the whole show.
We totally criticize people constantly. All right, we should really get two check marks. That's maybe a double.
Successful people embrace change. That's a big fat no.
Yeah, I don't like change. Yeah. I'm putting an X.
Unsuccessful people fear change.
But I fear change.
So I think it's like one, but the problem is this should be one check mark or the other. That's the problem. We're getting a problem here. Successful people forgive others. Unsuccessful people hold a grudge. Oh, I hold grudges all day.
Sometimes I forgive people.
Successful people talk about ideas. Unsuccessful people talk about people.
We talk about ideas and people. We're check marks on both sides.
Successful people continuously learn. Unsuccessful people think they know it all.
We both continuously learn and know it all.
Yeah. Successful people accept responsibility for their failures, and unsuccessful blame others for their failures. Successful people have a sense of gratitude. Unsuccessful have a sense of entitlement, and successful people set goals and develop life plans. Unsuccessful people never set goals.
I am.
Wayne, how are you doing there with your number?
I'm
nulled out.
You're even.
Even.
You are not successful nor unsuccessful. Wayne is mediocre.
No. I'm thinking probably if you get both sides, it's like you're a sociopath.
Yeah.
I think it's
what about you?
I got pretty much even on both sides. Yeah. I stopped making check marks, but I like.
But here's the thing.
I do all of those things.
It's not true.
No.
It's simply not true. It's just a thing. It's a lame motivational poster. You know who doesn't read these posters?
Successful people.
That is the one thing I know by data points, is that successful people, people who are busting their arse, doing their thing, are not on Instagram reading motivational quotes.
There's just no one way to do anything. And like, it's too oversimplified.
Scott, what's the harm? Because it's crap. Yeah. It's not true. You know, some of the most successful people I know criticize others. They fear change. They think only their way is a right way. They hold grudges all the time. They think they know it all. Some of them might even actually do. They blame others. Some of the most successful people in corporate business, Forbes 5 companies, are some of the worst humans out there. Jack Welch. Jack mother flippin' Welch was known as Hacksaw or Chainsaw Jack Welch. Relentless for slashing people. I may have used an actual chainsaw on people. This is what Steve Jobs, holy, you must have checked 9 out of these 10 things on the unsuccessful side of things. It's such bull. It's such bull about this. You know what creates success? Work, luck, timing, skill. None of that has to do with soft skills, by the way. Now, is this a list of what makes you a better person? 100%.
But even that is biased in a lot of ways. Like the reading TV thing, I think, is highly biased.
Yeah.
Because like there are many successful people that TV could even be part of their job. And does that count, like videos and stuff that you're watching? Is that TV? Because some people it's about learning principles, right?
Biased. Some people learn more watching something. Some people learn more reading something. Some people learn better doing this. It's based on learning principles. It's such a throwaway motivational thing. It's just a confirmation bias, too. It's like, I'm like this.
Where it can be damaging, like, for example, I really don't like the fear change one. I think all humans don't like change. It's right. Normal. You're comfortable in whatever you're doing. And change is hard on everybody, always. So what my concern is, like, if I'm feeling really, like, concerned about a change and I read this, so then I'm an unsuccessful person because I'm afraid of change. Like, or the never setting goals. Like, some people aren't that's not how their brain works. Like,
I don't set goals.
No, I know you don't set
goals. Wayne doesn't set goals. We're doing fine.
Well, I'm touching his hand sweetly and calmly across the table to tell him that sometimes people plant goals for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't plan goals.
No.
But on the checklist, I do. Other side. Don't plan them.
I do, but I don't plan everything. Like, but there are things I plan. I don't know.
Wayne and I. No goals.
Yeah, we'll see how much work gets done.
Cochran over there.
If Wayne's your business partner, we'll see how much work gets done.
That would not last.
No, it wouldn't.
We'd have fun.
Yeah, and you would do nothing.
Yeah.
But talk about music.
We could write off concert
and
tickets.
Buy, and buy, like, equipment. I feel like I'd come back here and there'd be crazy equipment everywhere. And
we'd buy that soundboard from Sound City.
Yeah. Right,
from the documentary and stuff, too. And I don't even know what to do with it. It'd just be awesome to have.
I love this story.
Thank you.
It makes me really happy. So this is from people.com. And
yeah, this one's
great. It says, every day for nearly 30 years, John and Stella Chan have stood side by side behind the counter of their Donut City shop in Seal Beach, California. But in recent weeks, faithful customers began to notice Stella hasn't been around. They soon learned that Stella had suffered an aneurysm and is undergoing rehab. It says John, so her husband, needs money from their business, so he still goes in, works at the shop, and then at the end of the day rushes to the rehab center quickly after he closes to be with his wife. And so the customers realized that this was happening because they're loyal customers that have been going in for years, and they know the people that work there, and the people that work there are their friends, part of their community. And so some of them decided that they had to do something. So it says, they're such sweet, hardworking people. I thought if enough people would buy a dozen donuts every morning, they could close early so he could go home and be with his wife. Ever since, the shop opens at 4:10 a.m., sells out by noon, hours before it's 2 p.m. close time. The 60-year-old John is able to be with Stella, 63, at the rehab facility in the afternoon. This story gave me like goosebumps and made me so happy, and they appreciate it so much, and I just love everything about this. So all the customers every single morning go in, buy a dozen donuts so he can go home. He'll still make his money and still keep his business, and he can be with his wife.
And I think better than
I love people.
Better than just setting up a GoFundMe or something like that and give
no,
money.
No, because it's their business. They business love still their going. He's still working.
Puts the work in. Yeah. A lot of people don't want charity.
Plus, if they give the money, that would mean they would still not be running the shop. Like, I think running the shop puts the couple in the community.
And the
it's
product
why
goes out
there.
They still have the product. It gets more people eating those donuts.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story.
That's a great.
Made me happy.
Allison.
Makes me uneasy when Scott calls me Allison. Yes, love? How can I help you?
Are you ready for the nano influencers?
Seriously, I have no idea what that means.
It's from the New York Times. By now, you've probably heard of influencers, that group of internet famous people who have more than a million social media followers and can
is
make
that
big
the number
money.
Now? Like you're not allowed to call yourself an influencer unless you have a million followers.
And you may have even heard of micro-influencers who do the same thing for a still sizable but somewhat smaller social media audience from the tens to low hundreds of thousands. Now get ready for nano-influencers.
Oh my gosh.
That is the term, nanos for short, used by companies to describe people who have as few as 1,000 followers and are willing to advertise products on social media. Their lack of fame is one of the qualities that makes them approachable. When they recommend a shampoo or a lotion or a furniture brand on Instagram, their word seems as genuine as advice from a friend. Brands enjoy working with them partly because they are easy to deal with. In exchange for free products or a small commission, nanos typically say whatever companies tell them to.
That's terrible.
With roughly 2,700 Instagram followers, Alexis Baker, 25, had a relatively ordinary social media presence with photos of fashionable outfits and tropical vacation spots filling her feed. But her online persona changed when she started posting in praise of products like Suave Professionals Rose Oil Infusion Shampoo, Clinique Beyond Perfecting Foundation and Concealer, and Loco Coffee, a mix of cold brew and coconut water. Oh, yeah.
That is loco.
People who know Miss Baker were surprised when the hashtags used to denote advertisements, hashtag sponsored and hashtag ad, started popping up on her account. They were also a little impressed with that she was Instagramming like an influencer. My friends were like, wait a minute, you don't have tens of thousands of followers. How did you get contacted about this? And she didn't really have an answer for them. Miss Baker, a leasing manager in Alexandria, Virginia, said that she stumbled into a hobby/gig after being scouted by Obviously, which describes itself as a full-service influencer marketing agency. Now, here's the thing. So, and the rest of the article goes on and on about it. It makes sense. And but here's the thing. It's this is not new.
No, it's not.
It's just finding people who talk to your audience. And there's different pluses and minuses of this. Managing 100 nano influencers versus, or 1,000 nano influencers, I can't believe I'm saying that word multiple times, or 100 micro influencers or 5 major influencers, it comes with different pluses and minuses. The ratio of engagement to a Kylie Jenner post is a very small fraction of something who maybe have 1,000 really devoted followers, but that small impact or engagement with Kylie Jenner's ones still can produce hundreds of thousands, maybe even million engagements.
Yeah.
But your price is up there too. And obviously managing somebody who's got 59 million or so followers or more, depending on the person on the platform, is a little bit different to deal with than it is somebody who's got 1,000 and really likes
this. I know, but
this.
When you think about it, you're not really talking about one-on-one. You're talking about either dealing with a really popular influencer with millions of followers or 500 influencers with 1,000 followers.
Yeah.
So like it's, even though I understand it, you would think it would be easier to deal with a micro or nano influencer than somebody big. You're dealing with so many of them to be able to fill the same numbers that there has to be a lot of work involved with every interaction. It's like selling a product to a store versus being the wholesaler, like versus selling it to people.
Right. Direct to consumer. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is what Duri did with Tassimo.
Yeah.
And so we have that in unmarketing, right? Talking about Tassimo. What do we do?
2009.
Right. So Tassimo, and that was unmarketing?
Yeah.
And
the original one. It was in there. Yeah.
So Tassimo, where the single brewing coffee system was talking about going out to, and they used Radian 6 to go out and find people talking about coffee and a certain number of followers. And they did
but
that.
But it wasn't like mega superstar numbers.
No.
It was like,
and they went out and found X number of people. And was, let's say it was even 10 people. And then those 10 people, and myself included, those 10 people got to pick 10 people to get a free coffee machine themselves as well. And it was a big project. But it worked. And having a lot of people talk about something instead of one person is...
seems more valuable.
Yeah. But again, there's always pluses and minuses. I just am against the term.
Nano?
Yeah. I'm sorry for saying it in the first place. For putting it anybody's... head or mind.
You know who would never put a word like nano into your head or mind?
Emma.
That's all you're going to say?
Yeah.
You don't have like a tagline or anything to add on there?
Email marketing, done right.
Very good. Excellent. You're killing this this host stuff. Oh my gosh. Okay, this article is from Gizmodo. It says, Tide just announced a new alternative to a classic bottle of laundry detergent. It basically looks and works just like a box of wine, which is sort of funny because of that whole meme about teens eating Tide Pods. I don't know why that's funny, but okay. But the new Tide Eco Box is no joke. It's actually a glimpse into the future where Amazon is dictating what our stuff looks like. The new box of Tide is specifically designed to play nice with e-commerce. Sure, it's good for the environment too. But the streamlined, easy-to-ship box makes it easier for Amazon and friends to sell detergent out of their giant warehouses. One Procter & Gamble brand manager said in a press release, the Tide EcoBox is designed to keep the convenience of online shopping for the customer, but reduce the overall impact of that convenience on our environment. The release goes on to detail how the Tide box can be shipped without a secondary box or bubble wrap, is lighter than plastic bottles, contains less water than regular Tide, and takes up less space on delivery trucks. I think this is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not really new. It's just there's always when you have a product, you always have to first make a good product and then think about how stores are going to sell it. So does something need to be hung up? Does it need to have packaging? Can it just be plain? Does it need any kind of convenience stuff? And a lot of people don't think about that. It's one of my concerns with like Kickstarter stuff is where people get all this money and they make this product, but they haven't actually had it in a store to see how is it sitting on shelves? Can people see it? Can they open it? Can they touch it? So the idea that Tide would change their packaging to make it easier to ship through places like Amazon makes perfect sense.
Well, and that's where now the difference is. It's not just retail ramifications of the packaging.
Shipping
it is also. It's the direct-to-consumer shipping.
Yeah, but do you remember when they started doing like when the top was a cup and then you poured into the cup and the top was the measuring cup? And that might be old. I don't know how long they've been doing that. But it's like that, but for like modern times,
We're going back because, you know, all the detergent used to be powder for the most part, right, in the box. Now they're going back to square.
This is liquid, though.
Yeah, but I'm saying they used to be boxes of powder, and then they went to the bottle liquid, and now they're going to the box of liquid.
Yeah.
It's like the boxed wine of detergent.
I like that the box can ship without another box. Yeah. I think that's
That's cool. That's where and as somebody who has a packaging background, back from my old days.
And a problem of ordering things.
And combination. But I'd go to Pack Expo in Chicago, McCormick Place, and that was, they'd have all these different packaging things. I find this stuff fascinating. I find when, with you with Nummies bras and the packaging, when you told me about how to hang them in a retail store and putting them in a certain packaging or a very easily displayable box.
Yeah,
is fascinating, that type of stuff.
So the article goes on, it says, so part of the story that they're talking about is not only that Tide did this, but that Amazon wants companies to do this.
Right.
So it says Amazon's ambitions to control packaging and as a result, even more of its supply chain doesn't stop with soap. The company has embarked on a newly aggressive effort to work directly with producers and sellers to create packaging that better adapts to its logistics needs. Earlier this year, Hasbro partnered with Amazon to redesign its toy packaging to eliminate extra space in the boxes and cut down on waste, a part of a decade-old Amazon program called Frustration-Free Packaging. Amazon did a whole video and blog post celebrating the partnership. Things have gotten even more aggressive lately. In September, Amazon announced a new incentive program that rewarded companies for complying with the frustration-free packaging guidelines. Sellers who sent properly packaged design package through Amazon's fulfillment centers could get those products delivered directly to consumers with the original branding on the outside. So if you complied and you had good packaging, you didn't have to be inside of an Amazon box. You could be in your own box, which is not something that they've done before. And I think that's very cool. So no more box within an Amazon box. Also, Amazon gave qualifying companies credits to help recover shipping costs.
Interesting.
I think it's cool because what's happened, they're doing it because of like it's easier, but I think that a lot of it is going to make less waste.
Yeah.
So there's like a good thing that's coming from it, even if that's not the intention.
One of the other photos that I didn't print out, but in the article, is a rectangular bottle of wine.
Yeah, that's cool.
Right. So the way the ship
is easier to package.
Shipping anything round
is
a waste of space.
Yeah.
Too. It's a waste of space. If you look at the emptiness of space, again, as a former packaging professional, space is the enemy of shipping.
Yeah.
Always. Space creates
waste.
Not just waste. No, but it allows movement.
It was a rhyme. I just wanted.
It was good. I liked Thanks. It. But it allows movement. And movement creates breakage.
Yeah.
And especially when you have multiple pieces in a box. Like shipping one bottle of wine, you wrap that up with some packaging, some Durabubble or bubble wrap, depending on who has a copyright. You wrap it up with some good, probably middle size, good tensile strength in the packaging. You ship it off. As soon as there's two bottles in there, different game, different story. Then you have that breakage. You have that friction that causes breakage. You have all those things. So square is your friend. Rectangle is your friend. IKEA is why there's geniuses,
yeah,
right?
Awesome.
Flat boxes, shipping everything out. Why do you think they do it like that? It's just such, so much better to ship. By the way, worst product ever to ship, bubble wrap. Actually shipping the packaging. It's so light and so bulky, but it takes up the same amount of space in an 18-wheeler as, you know, lead. But there's like, it's like $18 worth of product in the whole truck, so it was very hard. Anyway. Off to spectrum.ieee.org.
All that's right. A lot of
that's
ease.
That's a lot. Yeah. Zoom, the robotic pizza company, makes pies only a robot could love. Ooh, snap. Zoom, the robotic pizza maker, is now valued at more than $2 billion, thanks to its latest round of investment. According to the Wall Street Journal, this latest infusion of funds, which was $375 million, came entirely from SoftBank, and the Japanese conglomerate apparently has another $375 million at the ready, should they need it. The valuation in Silicon Valley terms makes the new company a unicorn, one of the rare breed of startups thought to be worth over $1 billion. And the article goes on and says, this is just wrong, because it's just not good pizza. Zoom, based in Mountain View, California, launched 3 years ago. The company set out to revolutionize pizza delivery by turning pizza making over to robots and then cooking the pizza in the back of the delivery van in ovens controlled through cloud-based software. Zoom has pitched van-based ovens as a vastly more efficient model for pizza delivery than using people to make the pizzas, cooking them in large ovens at the restaurant, and then sending them already cooked pizzas out with drivers. The company has also indicated that using robots for making crusts, spreading sauce, and cutting slices can improve quality control. And Zoom hopes that once its technology gets established for the pizza, it will be able to adapt the systems to other food products and sell robots instead of just pizza. Right now, the company has a small delivery radius, so the person who wrote this...
Did they say they were going to sell robots?
So this person says a small delivery radius, and the author goes on and says, I'm in it. I often spot a Zoom truck parked about a mile from my house. So a couple months ago, I tried it for the first time. I invited a friend over to join my husband and me in what I expect to be a treat. A treat it was not. We ordered two pizzas from the rather limited menu. The Veggie Supreme and the Sergeant Pepperoni. The biggest problem was the crust. The texture and taste could be best described as cardboard. The toppings were skimpy, particularly on the veggie. The couple of scraps of peppers and flakes of mushrooms had no resemblance to the piles of brightly colored vegetable pictured on the website. The quality of the cheese and sauce were fine. I wouldn't say the sauce was particularly flavorful, but it wasn't bad. Zoom's business vision touts its ability to get pizza to your door within 20 minutes. On my first order...
How long does pizza take now?
30.
Oh.
Who has 30 minutes? 20.
We all do. We all have 30 minutes.
On my first order, the app initially estimated the delivery time would be 27 minutes. About 50 minutes later, it provided an update. The pizza would arrive in another 23 minutes for a total of 38 minutes. Ultimately, it took closer to 50. Hint for Zoom, don't suggest a precision that isn't there. Saying 27 minutes sets a certain expectation, tell me half an hour. And if you're 15 or 20 minutes late, I won't be as shocked. Customer service at the delivery was impressive, as it should be for a startup trying to establish itself. So, there you go. Pizza gets to you. It's pretty, making the startup's pizza even less interesting to me is its pricing. The range from $15 for a basic cheese pizza to $25 for a combination with meat. Put Zoom's pies at the level of the artisan pizza restaurants in Silicon Valley. Those pizzas, while nothing like East Coast pizza, can be really good. Wow. Too high a priced. Takes longer than regular pizza. Mm.
Who cares if robots are making it?
Yeah, I don't care who's making it. As long as it tastes good.
Can I have a robot that makes pizza? Like here, like in the house? Like I just own it?
We have robots that eat pizza here, but not that make it.
Do they eat pizza?
The children.
Do we have time for another article, or are we sort of like running out of time?
Yeah, we're at.
Okay, we'll save it for another
made up
day.
Word, though?
Yeah, I would love to do a made up word.
Rock it.
Made up word. Don't make any sense. Made up word. Don't mean no offense. Made up word. It brings laziness. What is all this craziness?
Made up. They're made up.
So,
You scared me. I zoned out staring at the the puppy was sleeping and she's so cute. And then you hit your papers and I like snapped out of it.
The made up word this week, by the way, if you have a made up word, it's a word you see that usually a corporation makes, but you see it in an article online through the internet tubes. If you find one yourself, send it to us at @onmarketing on Twitter, @onAllison on Twitter, or onmarketing.com contact form, or any other way. You can send it by carrier pigeon. I don't really care. Send it to us. If we choose to use it on the show, we'll send you any one of our books. You let us know, but you have to hear us using the word and let us know instead of you just us telling you. You got to put some work into this, people. The word this week is submitted by Scott.
You?
Me. A word I made up, by the way.
You made up a word, and it's on our list?
I made up on the flight to Nashville, along with Wayne sitting across the aisle from us.
Oh, that's right.
When he came along to the show. The word is econogauntlet. Econogauntlet. Since we were all during the creating of the word.
If you guys work together, you might get made up words made.
Yeah, we would. We would. It would go far. Not really. Econogauntlet is when you're sitting near the front of the plane, sometimes in business class. Usually it's business class. And you get on there later than the rest of you, so all the overhead bins are full. So you got to put your bag back in economy. And then, when the plane lands, you leap out of your seat, run back to your bag, and by that time, everybody's already stood up, and you got to run the gauntlet of people to try to...
Because there were people who weren't there in time on our flight, right?
To reclaim your spot near the front again. So this is the fun part about this, is us in business class are already... We're jackasses, all right, at this point. We're elitists, and we're judging people as they get on, or just totally ignoring them. One of the two. There's no middle ground. I'm speaking for myself. And if you have to put your bag back in economy... And put it back there. And when people do that, they seem to think. Then look, if you get on late enough that you can't get your bag up top, that's your problem. So what you should do, but what a normal human should do, is sit and wait for the plane to start clearing out until there's a gap. Then you can go back, get your bag, and move. Or if you choose to squeeze your arse back to where that is, you wait until now that section gets out. But you don't get dibs on coming back to your spot. There's no room. And people do that all the time. Excuse me, I was up there. I don't care. You're not there now. That's how this works, people. You have to, and I've been trying.
Scott's trying to be a nicer, gentler Scott.
I'm trying. Last time we were on a flight, I just stayed seated. When the bell went off, I didn't.
And then people started going in front of us, and I had it, so I stood up.
So it's like, so then I started letting people off, and the logic is you go row by row. It's because we're humans. Except when I'm sitting down waiting and not sticking my leg out in the aisle, people just kept going and going and going. Not even a second of saying, hey, you're up.
They thought we needed assistance and we're waiting to the end.
No. Needed assistance of being a jerk. That's all. A Kano gauntlet.
Oh, sweet Scott. It's almost Christmas. Cheer up.
Yeah, it should be. It's like Christmas is almost right now. I think when this is coming out.
Right, it'll be Christmas?
Ish. Close. Ish. Yeah, it's going to be three. Yeah, right around the time.
Awesome.
I like Christmas.
I know, we do. That's good.
And next week's episode will be coming out around the cruise.
Ooh, I like the cruise the best.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.